culture, discipline, accountability.
Mistreatment, misrepresentation.
Knowledge is power, y'all.
There has to be accountability.
This pandemic of toxic work culture and mistreatment has got to stop.
The podcast for federal employees by federal employees.
What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Fed Up. I'm your host, Ron Speakman, and today we have a very special edition of Fed Up Today, where we will be talking with a rural carrier who has no position within the union, just a regular employee here like most of you, who's helping the main man behind the decertification process of the NRLCA, which again is the National Rural Letter Carriers Association. And we're going to hear what they got to say, explain a bit more about the process so everyone can understand better why this is happening and why they are doing it. So without further ado, please welcome in my guest today, Jamie King. Jamie, welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And listen to a couple of your podcasts there, and I just appreciate all that you've been doing for everybody. You know, we need somebody on this kind of platform that's going to do this for us and kind of get our voice out there. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Now, Jamie, we're going to jump right in here and get into it. I know Mr. John Chandler couldn't join us today. And for those of you out there, John is the man who started the decertification process against the NRLCA and is continuously helping this process along. Now, Jamie, when did you guys first start decertification process towards the NRLCA?
I think for both of us, it mainly started around the time that we realized that the new pay system that the USPS was putting into place, you know, was imminent. And that was around April and that May area. And John had already started, I think, just right before they had implemented. I think it was May 6th because they kept postponing his pay system. And so he had started that in April to kind of jump the gun on that a little bit, get ahead of the game. And so he started around that time. And then I started around maybe a month later, and then I ran into him, you know, shortly after that, which was great.
Okay. And that was this year or last year?
That was this year.
This year. Okay. So we're roughly 4 months?
Yeah, about 3 or 4 months in.
To date? Wow. Okay. And from what I understand, you have nearly 5,000 signatures. Is that correct?
Yes. He's managed to collect about 5,000 signatures so far. And this has been, you know, just kind of word of mouth in a local area, you know, between there. Right. A little bit from here. And so there hasn't really been any coverage on this. Otherwise, I think we'd have quite a bit more signatures. And so people don't understand that this is actually going on. They don't really know that this is happening out there. And so they're not informed and understanding that there's a decertification process happening now and they can get on board with that. And I think once more people know about it, we're going to have more signatures, and this should be a pretty quick process, I would think.
Absolutely. From my understanding, you have to have at least 30% of your members' signatures to bring this to the NLRB before the actual process really begins. Is that correct?
That is correct. And for those that don't know, the NLRB, that's the National Labor Relations Board, and they're right. The ones that have set this requirement. Because we are under a national contract with this union, we have to go through them. And what that means is we need to get that 30% of the workforce, not the entire workforce, but just everyone that's under that contract. So if you're an RCA, if you're a regular carrier, if you're a PTF, if you're on that rural craft, you're eligible to sign this. And so we have to get 30% of those people, which is, you know, roughly 39 to 40,000. It's hard to get an exact number because there's just no way that shows us the exact amount of employees that we have right now. So we're just estimating it's around that 39,000-40,000 signatures that we need.
Okay. Well, it seems like you guys are well on your way just within 4 months of reaching just about 5,000 signatures as far as reaching your goal. But tell me, when do you need to have that magic number of signatures in by? Is there a specific date?
There is a time limit on that. Now, it cannot be done during the middle of a contract. So the current contract that we have ends at the end of this year, and then it'll go into negotiations for another contract. Now, typically, that doesn't seem like a really quick process. A lot of the times, like I believe last time we were without a contract for about 1 to 1.5 years before they ratified the next contract. Right. And so we want to get these as quick as possible, because if they ratify a contract quickly, then we're going to be locked into that contract. So the goal is to get these signatures in by the end of this year before this contract expires and before they have time to negotiate a new contract. because that's going to be our opening window. If we're unable to get those signatures before another contract goes into place, we're going to be stuck with the NRLCA for at least that next contract period. So we'll be stuck for another 3 years if we don't get these signatures in a decent amount of time here.
Right. So if it doesn't happen, the length of time would be roughly 3 years to the next contract?
It will be stuck with that next contract, right, for the next 3 years, assuming they ratify one immediately. If they don't have one in place yet and we're still under this contract, then that should buy us a little bit of time, I believe.
Sure.
But if they were to just, let's say they heard word that we're trying to decertify them, and if they were to just try to rush, you know, take whatever comes on the table from the USPS, say, you know, we want to stay in power and they're trying to decertify us, let's just go ahead and just ratify whatever contract, we'd be stuck.
Gotcha. Now, Jamie, I'm hearing a lot of mixed reviews from your union, who I speak with across this country. Some are for it, some are against it as far as the decertification. Some people don't understand the process in its entirety. Many people think they are just trying to get rid of the union and that's it. They'll have no representation. So for our listeners out there, could you please explain a bit more about this process and what it entails? Just basically help set the record straight, so to speak.
Correct. Yes. What you stated is true. And we have actually heard the same things. And for myself as well, I understand the concern there. And everyone that thinks about it understands that concern, because they are correct. We don't want to just de-unionize. And that's not what this process is for. We're not trying to just say, hey, you know what? We don't want a union. We want to fight for ourselves, because that can be a disaster. 100% I agree why people are going to be on two separate ends of this. The goal for this process, though, is not to be without a union. If we have the option between, right, keeping this union and being without a union, we'll go ahead and we'll stay with the union, because that will be the better evil, if you want to say that, because without a union, we could be destroyed. I understand that. Right. But the process that we're trying to do is actually switch unions, is what we'd like to do. And so John and myself, we've been in contact with Teamsters a few times. I'm still waiting on another rep to get back to me. But the goal is, if we're able to get another union on board, we would just like to be able to just swap. So how it would work is, we would decertify the current union, and we would also file paperwork to have a new union take its place. So that should be a pretty seamless process if we're able to do that. And so that is the goal. If we're unable to get another union, then of course we're not going to attempt to decertify the union and be without a union. And so people don't need to be afraid that we're going to be without a union, because that's not the goal. If we're not able to get a union, we're going to stick with what we have. And people also need to understand that the signatures only give us the option to vote. It doesn't do anything right away. Mm-hmm. So we're going to submit these signatures, and it just says, hey, we have a majority amount of people, or enough people that want to decertify the union. Let's cast a vote. And so what they'll do is, every member in that craft, I mean, when I spoke with the lady from the NLRB, she let me know if it was a smaller office kind of situation, they would usually want to come in person and take votes from the people that are there. But she said, because this is such a large organization, it would probably be a mail-in ballot. So everyone in the craft would be able to cast their own vote. Even if you've already signed, if you had signed that you're for the union being decertified, and then you get your mail ballot and you realize, oh wait, there's not another union in place, you can just go ahead and say, I'm not for decertifying the union anymore. And you're no longer, you know, obligated to what you originally put. And so you don't need to be afraid that if you sign, you're going to be stuck with what you've signed up for. You have the option later to vote, and you can always change your mind. So if you think that the new way that we're going is not for you, then by all means, just say, you know, I want to stay with this union. And that's completely fine. If we get the 30% of votes, myself included, and we don't have another union to replace this union, I wouldn't vote to be without a union either. I would stick with the current union. And so I think people need to understand, all we're trying to do is get the chance to vote. That's it.
That's interesting. Now, I got to ask you, is there a difference between the digital signatures and hand signatures?
There is. And so for the people that might be listening, John Chandler, he's the one that's running decertifynrlca.com. And this is where you can go to actually get the form if you'd like to just sign it yourself and submit it in, or if you'd like to print this off and get multiple signatures within your office or your surrounding offices, you can do that. We did speak to the NLRB. They do want physical signatures. Obviously, with the digital age, you don't want anything to be manipulated. You don't want double signatures. You know, so to avoid that, they do want hand signatures. And they did say they want you to print your name, they want you to sign it, and they want you to date it. So if you're collecting signatures or you're sending in one yourself, just make sure you follow those requirements. Handwritten or, you know, handwritten signature or signature, handwritten name, date. As long as you have those three on there and it's a physical copy, you're good to go. There, you, at one point there was a petition online and we had to remove that because we realized that that wasn't going to work. And so the only thing that we can do now is get a handwritten signature. And so for anyone that, you know, may have already signed, if you haven't signed, printed, and dated, I would suggest, you know, possibly just redoing that and sending that back in.
Right. All right. Thanks for the information. That makes sense. So, but I got to ask you, the bigger question here is why? Why do you and many others want to decertify your union, which again is the NRLCA? What is the biggest issue that you guys have with Ronnie Stutz and Company within your union?
I mean, that's kind of it's a big question because obviously we need to have various reasons for this. And I think at this point, what really hit us this time is that we've gotten this new pay system. Now, for those of you that don't know, we used to get paid on a mail count. And so somebody would come in, and sometimes it'd be a manager or volunteers would come in and they learned how to count mail. And so you would get a time credit for the work that you did. So for all the letters that you had to sort out, all the magazines that you had to sort out, all the packages that you had, you were given a certain amount of time delegated to these tasks. And it wasn't completely fair then, but it was at least a little more transparent. You saw the parcels that you had, you knew, understood the credit you were getting for it, and you were okay with that.
Right.
Now they've come under a new system, which is REX, R-R-E-C-S, and that system has no transparency to it. And I think at this point, this is the reason, this was like the last straw. We've already been dealing with other issues as far as a two-tier pay scale, the way that management has been treating people, the way that we're not getting paid for certain things that we were doing. And just at this point, for the massive amount of pay cuts that went across the board, it was just like, you know, this is enough. There's already been enough going on, and this has just made it even worse.
Right.
And so I think REX has been like the biggest thing at this moment that is driving us to decertify the union, because they're not fighting for us on this. They let this system go into place, and they let it go into place without it actually working at the moment, which is a big problem because we have people that are getting overpaid and we have people that are getting underpaid and significantly underpaid, and they have no option to get that fixed. And they're not given the numbers to grieve it or file anything on it. They're just kind of stuck where they are.
Right. Now talk to me as far as the REC system a little bit more. You mentioned about the two-tier system. So anyone who's not rural out here, can you explain a little bit about that two-tier pay system?
Okay, so the two-tier system, this went into play, and this is actually something that UPS was actually striking for this month. Part of it was this two-tier pay system because, I mean, who really likes to be coming to a job and realize you're doing the exact same work as the next person, but you're getting paid significantly less? And so that was been a problem, but that has been going on since the contract, I believe, in 2010. And this one actually affected me pretty hard because in that contract, it said carriers hired between November 24th, 2010, and I believe August 10th, 2012, they were hired on tier one pay scale, which was, I don't remember the dollar amount then, but it was much higher than the scale two, which it still is today.
Right.
And when they went regular, they already understood under this contract, they were going to take a pay cut and they were going to be moved from tier one down to tier two, which was crazy because the people that were on tier two, when they went regular, they took a pay raise. And so there wasn't really a savings for the post office there, it didn't seem like, because, like, for instance, with me, when I went regular, my brother was also about to go regular as well. So I ended up taking about a $2 per hour pay cut when I got my own route, and my brother got a $2 an hour pay raise when he got his route. He had been there for about 3 years. I had been at the post office for 8 years. And so it basically was just shifting money from my pocket into my brother's pocket based on this two-tier system. And it was just, you know, I wasn't mad at him or anything like that, obviously, but
right.
It was just knowing that the post office, it made it sound as if they were trying to save money here or there, but all they did was just move money from one person to another. And so I didn't understand that. And the two-tier pay system has always been a problem because everybody understands how it works. They know what's going on with it. They know they're doing the same amount of work and they're just getting paid less for it. And so what we'd like to do at some point is get rid of the two-tier system. It should just be everyone's on the same pay scale. Or what it should have been at the time is when it first started, they swapped people over. So you were on tier one and then you went to tier two. they should have just left the people alone. If you were on tier one, that's what you were on. And then whoever was newly hired after that was tier two. Okay.
Right.
It wasn't the greatest, but at least you weren't punishing people that were already tier one and putting them on tier two. The best goal, you know, the best possible outcome would be to just get a tier one, you know, one pay scale throughout and just let that be fair. And I think that's kind of what we're hoping for on this.
Is there a lack of transparency between the agency, the union, and the rural carriers itself regarding RX?
There is. There is a lack of transparency. And they understand this, and they've really given us no option to fight this. So when they came out and they said, on May 6th, your new pay is going to be this, and they gave us a form that showed what the new pay was going to be, and it gave you some numbers on this page, you know, your total time to the door, the amount of packages that you had, and this is all based over a 52-week period. Now, bear in mind, before, this was physically counted by a person. And so somebody's eyes and hands were on a package. They knew you had 30 packages, 40 packages, 50 packages. They gave you credit for all those packages. And the door credit, carrying that package from the vehicle to the door, the amount of time that that took, there was already something built in that said, this is how much you're going to get paid for that. There was nothing involved that included the distance or anything like that. That was kind of a part that sucked. You know, if you had a long driveway, you got paid the same amount as someone that had a short driveway. I understand that. So the new system was put in place and said, you know what? We have these scanners. They're based on GPS. They're going to be more accurate. We're going to use these to determine what you get paid. It should be a lot more fair like this. People that have long driveways, they're going to get paid more than people that have short driveways. Fair enough. And I'm okay with that. That is fair. What's not fair is showing the transparency there, because we understand, especially here in Florida, you know, we have hurricanes, we have a lot of clouds, we have a lot of rain. This is interfering with the GPS system. The scans are not working correctly at times. There are times that we come in and they say, hey, you forgot to clock into there. You forgot to load your vehicle there. You forgot this. And we're like, no, we scanned that. We already understand that's part of, you know, the way the system works. We're going to be on this. We've scanned it. And it happens across the board. So for like, there was a whole day where everyone's scans were messed up. No manager is able to go in there and fix that. And so
what was it? What was the outcome of that?
We don't know. It's going to be evaluated into the next 52 weeks. So if you came in and they say, hey, you didn't have this scan, well, now it's just missing. So that's going to affect your pay. That's crazy to me.
That's ridiculous.
And there's no way. Yeah, there's no way to verify. It should be, if I went out and I delivered X amount of stuff today or whatever today, I should be able to come back either that day or a week's worth and verify and say, yep, I had a box holder here. I had a box holder here. That shows up in the system. That shows up in the system. But they don't have any way to show us that. And we just have to assume everything is okay, which shouldn't be the case.
Right.
And I think one of the craziest things that they've mentioned lately is just a couple of weeks ago, but about 2 weeks ago, the manager had a, you know, a stand-up talk. And she said, if you forget to scan something, or if your substitute carrier forgets to scan something, you can no longer scan it in late or the next day. So that's a huge problem, because we understand, you know, sometimes how subs work. They want to get home. They have to do multiple routes. They're not, you know, switching their scanners for the routes. They're not scanning the box holders. And some of them, they don't really care sometimes. You know, we've all been there. We understand how it works. And so if that carrier doesn't scan in your Red Plum or your box holders for that day, your route doesn't get that credit for it, which means in your evaluation, you've just lost 30 to 40 minutes for that week.
Unbelievable.
And that also, that also affects the regular, because that's their pay. So now a regular carrier has to fear, you know, if I'm going to take 3 weeks off for surgery, or I'm going to take, you know, the month off of December, you know, for vacation with my family, is that going to significantly impact their pay now? Because they're going to be multiple carriers on that route for the month, and they're not going to be scanning things correctly. They're going to be rushing and not doing things correctly.
Making mistakes by rushing.
That doesn't just affect the stuff. Yes, it doesn't affect just the substitute. It affects the carrier's yearly pay based on somebody else's performance. That should not be the case with anybody's work. Whatever's assigned to the route, whatever you do is what you should be paid. It shouldn't be based on someone else.
Have you guys tried filing any grievances? And if so, what happened?
So we had, at the beginning, they gave you a set of requirements on filing the grievance. They had agreed that there were only certain things that you could file a grievance on. So on this form that I was talking about, they said any entry that had a zero or some questionable number in the data field, you could file a grievance on that. You could do the office walk time. You could do like the route length. You could do if they messed up how many boxes were on your route. If they missed your daily dismounts or your like daily activities, but they didn't give you an option for missing mail or the fact that the scanners don't work all the time. So I couldn't put a grievance in and just say, hey, look, I need data to be sure that this scanner was connected to GPS on every part of my route for the last 52 weeks. There was no information on it. So I don't know if the scanner went down at any moment and I'm not getting paid for something. I don't know if when I was off of work, if the substitute carriers scanned the red plum or any other box holder that was there. I don't know any of that information. I don't know the parcel, if the parcel counts were correct. I don't know if the unscannable parcels are in there. We don't know any of that information.
And that's because it's GPS, correct?
It's GPS, yep. It's GPS, and it relies on the carrier to input some of this information.
So,
and that's a problem.
So the union, so they are filing grievances, but nothing's coming of it. So pretty much there's carriers getting paid more, carriers getting paid less, carriers not getting paid at all in some cases all over the country. Grievances are being filed, but it's more or less like, okay, we'll fix this shit and pay you guys later, do your job, but then later never comes. Is that kind of a fair assessment?
That's a fair assessment, and that's exactly what the union has said. They said that the union and the post office are aware that there are problems with the system.
Who said that in your union?
I believe that was, I feel like it was Ronnie, but I can't remember. I don't know if they quoted exactly who it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But they said that they know there's problems with it. The USPS's position was to just implement the system out, fix the problem later. And the problem with that is we never get any information on if it was even fixed correctly. So if they take 52 weeks right now, so a whole year from now, and they come out and say, you know what, we miscalculated some things, we're going to fix it. We don't even know if the 52 weeks of data is correct for them to be fixing. So it should have been implemented correctly to begin with. And I think they were in such a rush because USPS knew that this was going to devastate the rural craft. I don't understand how, and the, you know, the union didn't understand that. They thought that they thought we were going to get paid more because for years they were saying, oh, it's going to be fine. You know, based on the studies, we believe most routes are only going to lose, you know, fluctuate 1 to 2 hours. So you might go 2 hours up. You might go 2 hours down. Well, when Rex came out, 66% of routes ended up losing, you know, 8 or more hours. My route personally lost 12 hours. Now, this is a huge fluctuation based off of the original 2 hours stated. And so the union grossly misunderstood the impact that this was going to have on us. And USPS knew this because they had the numbers and they weren't providing it to the union. But they knew we were going to take a huge pay cut. And they knew it was going to save them a lot of money. And I think that was their goal. Let's hurry up and get this out because we can save money now.
Right. Regardless, though, if it was Ronnie Stutz or another national or local union leader who said basically, look, we know it's an issue, but there's nothing we can do about it. Tough shit. Go back and do your job. We'll fix it later kind of deal. Meanwhile, later never comes. Listen, man, that's fucked up. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want that representing me if that's what you're giving me for an answer to that particular situation. That's just me, though. But anyway, moving on, I got to ask you, man, according to my research up until 2021, the NLRB reported that 240 decertifications were filed. 125 elections were held of those 240, and 75 of those were lost by the union. So I got to ask you, are you confident with those numbers?
I do feel pretty confident as long as the people are well educated on what it is, because in those statistics, it doesn't let us know whether or not they were replacing a union, because some people, they just want to get out of the union. They just want to decertify the union. They want to represent themselves. And I think that does scare a lot of people.
Right.
And I think understanding that we only want to do this if we can swap to a better union or someone that's going to represent us better, I think that would make it a little more comfortable for people, and they would be willing to cast their vote to decertify so long as we have something else in place. Now, if we don't have something in place, then 100% I'm 100% fearful that we would get that. And honestly, I wouldn't want to decertify unless we have something else in place. And so I do feel confident that as long as they're educated and as long as we're able to line up another union, then we're going to be okay.
Right, right. I love it. I wish more people like you and John would step up and take some kind of action like you guys, especially when they are represented by those unions which partake in either collusion or corruption, locally or nationally speaking, and just not even providing the representation that union dues paying members pay for. I know you're well aware that a lot of people like to bitch, moan, complain about things, but they always want to bitch about it, but they never want to be part of the solution, right? They're just constantly unhappy or, you know, I can get into the toxic work environments, but that's for another time. But I'm sure you get what I'm trying to say here. You know, just be part of the solution, not the problem. You know, offer some suggestions to offer a solution. Decertification, in the right case, can help you. It can help you to gain better representation, stronger representation. And it can either create that unity, which again, unity is a union. It can create that, which is lost, which I believe why, you know, people want to decertify this particular union. Rural carriers are upset, and rightfully so. Where's the representation? I can't tell you how many times that I've talked to people who've been through on-the-job work injury. Devin Cassidy, I believe he's your OWCP guy. I can only imagine what it is to be in his shoes, being like almost the only fucking person to help people, God forbid, they're injured on a job. But Ronnie Stutz needs to fucking get him help. I don't know if Devin asked for help. I don't know. I can't speak on that. But I know for a fact that misrepresentation or lack thereof was missing from these rural carriers who got injured on the job and who are still going through it today. Years, I'm talking. There's got to be accountability for that. So I got to ask you, were you ever injured on a job personally, or hear of anybody injured on the job?
I actually was not injured on the job. We have had some people get injured on the job, and I don't know how well. Like, we've had a carrier since I've been at this post office in this location, we've had one carrier have a dog attack, and she's been out ever since. She came back on light duty for a little bit, but I haven't seen her in maybe 2 years now, so I don't know what's going on with her.
Right.
But I hope she's getting taken care of. And then the last carrier that we had was someone tried to rob her, and, you know, they ended up shooting a hole through part of the vehicle. Mm. And she's been out maybe for about a year now. I don't know if she plans to come back. And so I haven't actually been able to talk to them and see what that process has been like, if they've been, you know, treated fairly, or if they've been under any sort of harassment for firing us. But at least in this office, it seems as if, you know, they weren't trying to force them to come back or do light duty or anything like that. So it looks like they're being taken care of, but okay. I don't honestly know.
What is your take on this? I know you've spoken to the two-tier system and how you want it to be the same for everybody, right? But would you rather be paid like you are now, or paid as an hourly employee, kind of like the city side? I've kind of heard it from both ways. So I'm curious to know what you think and why.
I have thought about the hourly at times. I actually almost switched to city side before. Now, honestly, the big thing that actually made me not want to go city side was the hourly aspect of it. Now, not under this contract that they have now, but previously they were actually, to me, it felt like a really good contract about 13 years ago. And at that time, I was thinking about switching, because even though it was hourly, they were making really great money. I thought it was very fair. The only problem that I have with that is I do like the evaluated system. And so that is something that I think a lot of people do want to keep. I think a lot of people want to push for hourly because they understand that under hourly, you're going to get paid for what you have. And I think the post office doesn't necessarily like hourly because they understand that there's potential for abuse there as well. Mm-hmm. So as long as you have an honest carrier, you know, you're going to get paid for the work that you have, which is great. And then, you know, the problem is just the people that obviously understand that since it's hourly, they could sit there for a while and do 50, 60 hour weeks, and they don't really have that kind of volume. And so there is positives and there's negatives there. The biggest part for me was just being able to come into work, understand what my volume was, understand that I was getting paid fair for it, and then being able to have that benefit of, if I get done earlier, I'm basically salary kind of thing. I'm still going to get paid for the work that was there. I just did it, you know, more efficiently, and there was a reward for that. And so I did like the evaluated system. I would like to stay with the evaluated system.
Right.
And I know some of the carriers that I talked to would also like to stay under eval, but I'm on the same end as you, where there's people that wouldn't mind going hourly either. And I understand that, because they're working 48 hour routes that are worth 56 hours, but they're not getting paid for it.
Correct.
And so it'd be nice to say, you know what, I have 56 hours worth of work here, and I'm going to get paid 56 hours worth of work.
But now if you have a 3 hour day and you're evaluated at that 5 hours, you're still getting paid that 5 hours, correct?
Correct.
Gotcha. Correct. Interesting. So now I got to ask you, also from what I hear from other people within the rural craft, is when you're an RCA, and we talked briefly about this before, you and I, earlier before we got started here. And that is when RCAs are in their positions for an extended number of years before coming a regular. And each of them said that they wish they can buy back their time when they were an RCA, mainly because they could retire much sooner. Now, from what I hear and what was told to me, this was brought up many times to the union and national leadership. Was this ever talked about with any of your previous or current contracts between your union and the Postal Service?
From what I hear, they keep bringing it up is what it sounds like. And I don't understand why it just never goes through. I don't understand what the reasoning behind that is. And that would be something that we would love to have in place, because there's a lot of us that did spend a lot of years as RCAs. I'm speaking to some carriers here at my office that, you know, if they were able to buy back those RCA years, they could retire in the next year or so. And they would love to retire now, obviously, because of the rec system and what's going on with their routes and the way that we're being harassed about it. And, you know, they would just love to get out, but they can't do it because they can't buy back those years. And me personally, I was an RCA for 8 years. And so just thinking about it, I've been a regular for about 5 or 6 years now. I've been so post office for 13 years. So regular for 5 years. I would have 13 years in, you know, counted closer towards retirement, but now I'm at 5. And it just sucks knowing that I did 8 years and it just doesn't count for anything, because during that time, you know, we weren't getting health coverage. We weren't able to put into retirement. And so I had 5 years, you know, putting into retirement when I should have almost 13 years. And it just sucks knowing that the years just don't count for anything.
Right. Yeah, it definitely does, man. It definitely takes a hit on your end goal for retirement there. But I had to ask because, you know, inquiring minds want to know. But now, do you actually have an actual store to represent you at your office? At your office?
We do not.
You don't?
Not at our office. And we haven't had one for a couple of years now.
Yeah, a lot of offices don't have a store for the Royal Craft in their office, unfortunately, even the smaller ones. The reason why I was asking, I was going to ask you, but I guess I'll repose the question as, instead of you personally, but do you see or hear from anyone else how, and this, listen, this can be your rural side or even a city store who from the NELC who's actually in your office. I don't know if you have city routes in your office. Do you?
We actually have all rural routes. I think it's like 50 rural routes.
Okay, so you don't even have cities. That doesn't apply to you. But how much do you see that union stores are in bed with management? You know, meaning that they're for themselves and their agenda and for management rather than representing the members of their respective craft.
Correct. We just got a new girl, and I've had to deal with her once or twice, and anyone that's had to deal with her understands that she's very hard to work with, and she's not really the greatest union rep. Now, I did get out of the union a couple years ago when I took that pay cut, because I understood that they weren't fighting for me at the time, and so they made it very difficult to get out. But I did get out, and when I did have something to bring up with the lady, she was saying, you know, you shouldn't ask me any questions about this. I don't need to answer questions about this. You're not even a paying member kind of thing. And I was like, okay. So, you know, I haven't really dealt with her since, because that was you know, her attitude about it. But the guy that was previously and right before her, he, everything that you brought to him toward on a grievance, instead of, now, if you're representing your carriers, you shouldn't do anything that, you know, obviously goes against, you know, the policy that you have implemented there. But he would go any way that he could in order to make sure that it was the managers and the post office that were going to be correct and, you know, and right in those situations, as opposed to seeing where they might be messing up and where they may be harming the carrier. It was very difficult to deal with. If you asked him any questions or you followed the grievance, you kind of just knew it probably wasn't going to go in your favor. And that he was a very difficult guy to work with. And he's luckily been out, but I don't think we've replaced him with much better, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. And which is, again, just another example of why this decertification is being done. You know, when you got stores being in bed with management, that's poor representation. You're supposed to be there for the members, for your coworkers at that respected office as a local store, not for your own agenda to get what you want with management. I mean, eventually you keep making a deal with the devil, you eventually going to get burned. That's the way I look at it. You're not there for yourself.
Correct.
But, I mean, it's... I got to say, listening to you today, I can understand why you guys would want to start the process of decertifying your union, which again is the NRLCA. And I definitely wish you the best. But Jamie, is there anything else you want to share with everyone listening today? Any kind of message you want to leave with them?
Yeah, I guess towards the, just the people listening, the craft that want to get in, just understand that at this point, you know, the post office has gone too long in its ability to see, to deceive us and to cheat us. And we know that they've been cheating us for years, whether it be the mail count or anything else. You know, they've gone too long with no accountability. We've never had the third party auditing that we need so we can have that transparency. So we understand that we're not being cheated by them. You know, we never had that. You know, we're tired, we're frustrated, you know, we're hurt, we're angry, and we're tired of being pushed to that edge. You know, we're at that point that we're going to fall if we don't push back. You know, the union has failed us. You know, they sit at their meetings. It doesn't seem as if they're getting a lot accomplished for us anymore. You know, it's time for a change. We need a union that works for us. So I just, you know, really urge anyone, if you're able to get on that website, decertifynrlca.com, download that petition. And John on there as well, he's saying, you know, if you're not able to print this off, he will mail one out of his own money to you. And so take advantage of that if you're not able to, you know, print it yourself. Obviously, if you're able to do that, that would be great because he can't afford to send it to everyone in America. But get on there, get some signatures. At least if you're not going to take it around your office, at least submit your own signature. At least do that because every signature counts. Get those in there. Understand that this isn't something that's going to remove the union. It's just going to give you the chance to vote. If we're not able to line up another union, we're just going to vote. We want to keep this union. It's as simple as that. But if we're able to line up another union, you're going to want that opportunity to vote on that form and say, I want to swap unions because it's going to be better for all of us in the long run.
Right.
We need new people in. We need a fresh management team. We need someone that's going to come in and fight for us and that's going to do the right thing by us and allow the post office to give us the numbers and the accuracy and the transparency that we need because this is our paycheck. It's not fair that you can take a month off and someone can come in and destroy your route and it's going to affect your pay. We understand inflation is high, rent is ridiculous, housing prices are high. Every dollar that we can get, we need to get because we're being cheated and we need that money to come back because it's not fair the way that the system is working. The post office knows it and we need them to fix it. That's all we want. Fix the system or don't implement it until it's fixed.
Right. Well said. Well said. And there you have it, folks. Now, Jamie, one more question before I let you go. And that is with the decertification process. Once it goes to the floor and all that, you get your signatures. Who do you have in mind to take over for your current union right now, the NRLCA? Who do you want to take over for them if it comes to them being decertified? Because honestly, I look at it as an outsider coming in, may or may not do a better job, right? It's 50-50.
Correct.
But if you have... I guess what I'm getting at is, have there been talks, has it been talked about joining the NALC for that matter, who is a more powerful union? It used to be one of the most powerful unions and feared unions back in the day. I don't think it's that anymore, but however, I can say the representation is much more than what you guys get on the rural side. Would it make sense to put them in to be voted on as well for a merge? Because I know there have been talks at the table for quite some time now, at the national level, so to speak, with the NALC. So what are your thoughts on that? Would you rather join with an outside source who doesn't have any knowledge whatsoever of the Postal Service or union contract within that? Or would you rather deal with another union such as the NALC who actually is established already with carriers?
It would be nice if possible to get an outside company. And the only reason why we say that is because we do understand that the NALC is an option as well, but we also don't, at least from our craft, since we're not in there, we also don't know the intricate workings of how they operate. So we don't know if there's anything, you know, going on like this that we're having to deal with. And we don't want to swap a union and replace it with another postal union that we may end up doing the same thing to us. And
makes sense.
We also don't understand if we're going to be stuck with, like we said, some people do love the fact that it's evaluated because, you know, they're able to come in, do their job. If they have they can schedule an appointment at 4 o'clock and they don't have to worry about sitting there till 5 or using their annual leave for an hour or two to make that appointment. They love the fact that they know they're going to be able to come in, They're going to be able to get done. They're going to be able to make that appointment, and they're still going to be getting paid. And so they love the evaluated system. If the NALC, if we were able to sit down and talk with them and they said, you know what, we can come up with a new agreement that gives you the evaluated system and we'll work on these points here and we're able to do that, that'd be a different story. That would be great. That might work.
Right.
But at this point, we don't fully understand, you know, what's going on with their union. And so it's hard to jump to that. And so it just made sense that if we go with someone from the outside, we might get better representation, and they're not going to be under the influence of the post office, and they're not going to have any party members that are being paid or in bed, like you said, with, you know, the post office. And so we're not going to have that kind of corruption.
Right.
And so Teamsters came in mind because, you know, they already represent a craft, you know, a set of people that already deliver packages. You know, they already do what we do on a daily basis, you know, minus the mail aspect of it with letters and stuff.
Sure.
But they would understand how that works. I think they would get us a fair pay. They already understand what's involved with the delivery of packages and things like that. And so it just made sense that since they've done this before, they might be able to help us in this process here.
If I'm not mistaken, they're with UPS, right?
Yes.
Gotcha. All right. Well said. I appreciate that. Listen, Jamie, I appreciate you for coming on the show today. And John, if you're out there listening, thank you as well. Again, we need more people like you guys to step up and take some kind of action. For the lack of misrepresentation that you guys continually face. It's not right. It's not right that you get hurt in a job, you don't know, no representation. It's not right that you're not getting paid, you know, in management and your union is saying tough shit, we'll deal with it later. It's not right that some of your members are losing their jobs, their homes, going homeless, taking their own lives. This shit's got to stop. There's got to be accountability. I wish there was more people like you on different platforms, on different levels, who take action, maybe not the same kind of action, just any kind of action, really, right? Like I said, people talk shit a lot, but they don't want to be part of the solution. They want to stay part of the problem by just complaining over and over. So, but no, I appreciate you for coming on today. Thank you, Jamie.
I know. I appreciate you for what you're doing here. And, you know, just, you know, wish many blessings on your podcast here, because the more voices you can get out there, the more people are going to understand, you know, the intricate works of this, what's going on with this government facility here, because there's a lot going on your side, or, you know, I know you're retired, but on the city side as well as the rural side, there's just a lot going on that people don't see. They don't understand.
Yep.
They don't realize that people are being cheated on both ends, and there's a lot of corruption in there.
Absolutely.
And unless people are going to speak out and have a unified voice on that, it's going to be very hard for people to understand that. So thank you for the podcast. You know, and I can't wait to listen to some more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you too, brother. Before we close out today's show, I'm going to leave you with two quotes as usual. For all national and local union leaders out there, hear me when I say this to you. Every day that you wake up, remember, someone else did not. You are alive for a reason. So please do the right thing, especially when no one is looking. Again, it's called integrity. How many of your members got to suffer because of the lack of representation that you are giving them? How many families had to be destroyed because of the mistreatment and even misrepresentation you are giving along with management? How many of your members' lives have to be given before you realize there's a problem? No, a pandemic of corruption and collusion within your respected union. Again, every morning you wake up, remember, someone else did not. So be that change, be that light in someone's darkest hour when they need you. You could be having someone's, you could be saving someone's life and other people's lives as well, like family members. So please do the right fucking thing. Otherwise, you may find your union on the end of a decertification process from your own members. To all my union brothers and sisters out there, my message to you is this. A union isn't an outside organization that comes in to help you. A union is you and your colleagues coming together to empower each other as a collective. And trust me, that's way more powerful. Can't have a union without unity. So let's stand together. There's strength in numbers, y'all.
That about does it here for us at Fed Up. Please don't forget to like, follow, and share this podcast. And if you are fed up like everyone else is and want to share your story and experiences, your issues and frustrations, and want your voice to be heard, I invite you to be a guest on this show. There's strength in numbers, and together, by sharing our stories, we can and will make the change that is needed. Just send me an email at 1.fedup 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Again, that's the number 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Again, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay safe out there, my friends. We've been fed.